Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, we're joined in studio by comedian Brian Bates, co-host of the hugely successful Nateland podcast, to talk about emotional support animals on planes, what it was like to perform live in front of 20,000 people last month in Nashville. Meanwhile, me and Brian argue about the details of a golf cart accident that left one of us with a fractured appendage. Plus, John prepares his Mother's Day sermon and recommends we all climb on old garbage in St. Louis. Today's episode is not sponsored by CPUP Machines, the new solution for snoring dogs. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Johnny, it's your favorite podcast, I hope, because you're on it. It's Talk About That. We're back for another week.
I'm more of a true crime guy.
You know, you bring some true crime into the podcast, you know?
Sometimes.
I'm not sure that it would be enough to, like, put us in a different category, though.
I wonder if it's about, like, our fascination with true crime in America. I wouldn't say that we're safe anymore because we have mass shootings every day. But I think that there is some kind of a weird element to, like, why we seek out, like, dark things. Maybe it makes us feel like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why are we fascinated by that?
Well, I think the better question is, why are you? Because I'm not.
Oh.
Because I'm one of the good guys.
Everybody thinks they're one of the good guys, don't you think? I want to say John is not feeling super great today.
Not sounding super great either.
But you took an Alka-Seltzer Plus at the table when we had lunch, and you're like, this will help. And I go, oh, yeah, it's true, because when they invented that, there have been no more sick people. Once we got that out of the...
But
now you do sound better.
This is a great example of the extremist culture we live in, because you jump straight to the full extreme to say that that was going to cure me. Johnny, I just wanted to feel better.
I'm sorry.
It's kind of like you, like, as a friend.
Yes.
Like, I don't expect you to be perfect.
No.
But I would like for you to be better. Like, is that so much to ask for?
If I can't be perfect, I don't even want to try.
What shows?
I don't know.
I'm just kidding, Johnny. You're a great friend. So.
We took your mom out for lunch.
We did.
Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Early, but to celebrate Mother's Day.
Yeah, she's going up to my brother's this weekend, so... Yeah,
he gets custody. You're more of a... You get her on Thursdays.
I get her on the weekend, every other week.
That's nice.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah.
She was talking about old jobs and stuff, and it reminded me... Because she was talking about, like, growing up, and then... She worked for your dad's, her and your dad ran lawn care business forever.
Right.
But she was talking about another job she had, but it reminded me, she said she was a receptionist at a doctor's office, and it reminded me of this story, and I'm trying to figure out how to tell it in the show, but I do not know how to do it. Maybe we'll run it by our guest later, but, because we have a guest today. Uh-huh. Very, very exciting.
Oh, it's very exciting.
But Curry worked for as a receptionist for a doctor's office, and Curry loves her job now. She's been doing this for like over 10 years. She's a caregiver now. For somebody with disabilities, but before that she worked, and she did not love her job, and so she wasn't great. She'll admit that. They weren't a fan. She wasn't a fan of that job. She hated it. It was downtown. So one day she's like killing time on like monster.com or careers.org or whatever. Finding.
I hate my job.
Yeah. I hate my job.net. Yeah. She's looking and she sees her job on the thing. And it was like this moment of like the betrayal. But also, you're trying to cheat on them. And I said, this is like the job version of the Pina Colada song. You know?
Right.
Like, and then I realized, like, maybe we really do love each other. No, she left. I think they fired her. It wasn't long after that that they let her go. But it was the best thing that ever could have happened.
How funny would it be if I was on LinkedIn and I saw a posting?
Yeah, it's a weird
teaching
moment.
Pastor at the Church of Pleasant Grove. Gosh,
it's a weird moment. Look, you got to keep your head on a swivel out in the workplace. You don't know.
I think I'm gonna make a video. Yeah. I want to make a video about that. I don't know for what purpose.
No,
but lots of things we do here in ministry have no purpose.
Who needs purpose? But your mom is the best.
She is.
Yeah, she said that I was one of her honorary kids. She felt like I was one of the family. Which I know you have to say that. We were eating at Longhorn together.
Well, you're my longest standing adult friend.
Yeah. I can stand the longest.
Right. We've tested it. There's a whole Guinness thing. Yeah. So not the world record book, like the beer.
Yes.
But anyway, it's a whole other story. But it's 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Or 20?
More than that,
we're
maybe.
We're going on 26 now.
97
when we met.
97.
And so everyone else I know over that generally...
They're done with you.
Yeah, they gave up a long time ago. So
yeah.
But you, yeah, I mean, you have memories at my parents' house, like when I was a young adult, and so that's like a,
yeah.
It's great. It's great to share those things.
And we've been through some stuff, but your mom is so cool, and she just, I think your mom's wise too. She reminds me, my mom used to say this thing, and I think about it sometimes when I'm around your mom. My mom would say, Johnny, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's people that get ulcers and people that give ulcers, and we're the first kind.
Yeah, mom helps a lot of people, always has. She doesn't want to be a bother.
Yeah.
In fact, you invited her on the podcast today.
I did. I tried to get her to come. I wanted her to tell like John stories.
Yeah, because we had a little bit
like
of time.
Just for like 5 minutes. I was like, hey, do 5 minutes with your mom and then we'll have. Yeah.
And she was like, no.
She didn't want to do it. I think she felt like she didn't want to be like a ham. She's like, I'm not really. And I was like, well, it wouldn't be that. We would just be talking, you know, we would pull the funny out of you somehow. Yeah.
Mom is funny. And,
she is. Yeah. That's what I mean. That's just, I don't know. Who knows? But
yeah. I think you made her feel weird.
I did. I ruined her special lunch.
This is the time for us to talk about it.
Mama D, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mom does listen to the podcast. So, and a happy Mother's Day to everyone listening to the podcast right now.
To all those who celebrate.
Yeah. And I'll talk about this Sunday. Like, it is a day, and you have to be careful with this because to some, this is a day of mourning and sadness.
Yeah.
Because they lost their mom. To others, it's because they're at odds with their mom or didn't have a great mothering experience. I'm trying to...
You got to be sensitive.
Yeah, try not
to... But if you're so overly where you just gloss over it, you don't even want to mention it, that's kind of the wrong way too.
Yeah, we don't normally do...
Everybody stand and all that.
We've done those things over the years. Last few years, if we're in a different series...
Everybody gets a corsage.
We just kind of... Everyone, hey, well, the oldest mother stand.
Yeah,
I guess you have all... Everyone stand. And now, if you're not a mom, sit down. All right, and if you've been a mom for 1 year,
who drove the farthest? You can keep the centerpiece at your table.
Yes.
Those are yours to take home. That's nice.
You can have all the tithing envelopes you want, because we don't have a lot of other things to offer here on
Sunday. No, we don't. But you can have all the QR codes.
We usually just kind of recognize them, hey, happy Mother's Day, if you're a mom today, yay, kind of thing. And then, but I'm actually doing a Mother's Day message.
Yes.
So, which I don't always do. But we're in a series on wisdom in Proverbs, which you would think...
You get to share some motherly wisdom.
You would think that if I do Proverbs and Mother's Day, that I would go where, Johnny?
I don't know.
Because you don't know the Bible. Okay.
I don't know where you can't just say...
What's the chapter in the Bible that people would assume?
Proverbs 31.
That's it. I'm not doing Proverbs 31.
You're going to do Proverbs...
Because it's not about mothers. Proverbs 31.
32.
I'm doing 37. It's a new one. No, it's... You would assume that, but it's actually not about mothers. It's about... just women and wives. It's about a wife.
Anything.
It does mention her as a mother. So I'm actually using scripture. I'm starting in Proverbs and going other places. So, but I'm kind of coming to this idea of like what mothers reflect about the inherited nature of God.
Yeah.
Since if you read Genesis 1, it's that God made mankind, male and female. He made them in his image. So like we kind of miss like that females bear the image of God possibly in a way that males are not always looking for, you know, we're overlooked, especially in abusive church cultures and things like that. So I'm not going to abusive church cultures on Sunday on Mother's Day to be clear, but I think
you're going to lead with guys. There's a lot of abusive cultures we need to talk about.
Happy Mother's Day. Let's talk about Mark Driscoll.
You talk about inherited stuff like that though. I think I'm learning more about that with my family too. Like I think about it more cause I lost both my parents. So it's like, I think about what I'm inheriting from them. And the questions I wish I'd sat down and asked now that I'm older, I think about that. And I read this thing the other day and I wrote down an idea. I was like, I don't know if this will work, but it was like, I read this African proverb. It said, when an old person dies, it's like an entire library burned down. Hmm. And I was like, yeah, my family really never set foot in a library. We weren't really those kind of people. So when my parents died, it was like someone demolished a Dollar Tree. That's how I felt. That could just be me, though.
It's just beautiful, really.
No, it is. It's like you lose that thing. You lose that ability. And I wish I'd asked those questions. I just go, I wish I'd sat her down and just asked her this. What was this stage of your life like while you were raising kids? You were also going through this. Because I'm going through it now without that. Like, how in the world did you do this? How did you get through these pressures? But you just think about it. You think about yourself when you're a kid, especially. Yeah. Your life is, you're stuck on yourself, John. Why are you so stuck on yourself?
Well, I think I'm the best, I think is the main reason. But
yeah,
no, you know, and we talk about that in parenting, Sadie, even like your kids from the beginning, like your entire existence to them is literally taking care of them.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. And so there's like this transition of it's not going to be easy. We're going to have to now start helping you understand that actually the world is not completely hinged upon what's happening to you.
It's like Galileo, right?
Yeah, it's the sun versus the earth.
He said that we are not the center of the universe because everybody thought that the earth was the center and the sun and all the planets revolved around us. And he was like, no, I look through my telescope. We're just part of a system.
Yeah.
And they were like, burn him at the stake.
Yeah.
Wasn't great.
Excommunicated.
They didn't like Galileo when he said that.
No. No. You know what? I would love to hear what our guest has to say.
Oh, yeah, that's true. About Galileo.
But before we do that, though, this is a great moment to just take a short break and to hear a word from a few of our sponsors. And we're back.
Oh, wow.
Johnny, why don't you introduce our guest today? And he can pick right up on wherever he wants in the dialogue as
okay,
he's gone.
Sure. So our guest today is one of my dearest friends. I've known him since I started stand up, really. And he is a co-host of the Nate Land podcast. They're very popular.
Mm-hmm.
They're podcasts, and then they're very popular podcasts. He's on a very popular podcast called the Nate Land podcast. And comedian Brian Bates is with us today.
Yeah, welcome. Hello. Brian.
Welcome in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you.
Excited to have you.
Yeah. We've been trying to do this for a while. We keep having, you've had maladies and sicknesses.
Mm. Yeah, John, I'll start right there. Johnny asked me to come on the podcast. I said, shouldn't be a problem. I have to go to the doctor, have some stitches removed.
Yeah.
Never asked, oh, what's going on? You okay, buddy?
Well, I didn't want to be, it's HIPAA. I didn't want to be like, dude, what's going on with you?
The stitches. We have strict HIPAA policy
then
here.
I text him at the doctor's office. There's some complications. They're having to get another doctor. You know, we're waiting, blah, blah, blah. Still, never ask, what's going on?
Can you bring me a Coke when you come?
No, he was like, hey, man, I can hit the road, so are you going to make it or not?
I don't think. Wow. I can read my text. I don't think I said.
I have it right here. So finally. I just chime in. He doesn't ask. I just chime in and let him know what's going on in my life. And then he gave me a thumbs up.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He said, I'm laying on the table right now waiting on a doctor. And I said. But I was at lunch with John's mom. I didn't want to like look down at my phone and start typing a bunch of stuff to you.
Johnny, when did you first realize that you don't care about other people? Yeah. Let's go back to this previous conversation. When did your mom teach you?
This is very eye-opening.
That the world doesn't revolve around you.
I just didn't want to be like if it was some sensitive thing. I didn't want to be like, hey, let's talk about your oozing sores.
We've had a complication, some issues with my wound healing properly, currently waiting for a doctor. And he says, all good, just let me know if we need to push it to another week. And then I go ahead and tell him what's going on.
You know, I have found over
people's medical stuff is very, I don't want to just assume.
Like I was saying earlier, right. I've been doing this for like 25 years now. And I'm glad someone, I'm just kidding. You know,
next time I'm just going to be like, hey, tell me all about. Did you, I mean, right, what do you,
how are your boils and the Lansing going?
We'll just say, are you okay, buddy?
Brian, how did this make you feel?
I think.
Like, let's.
See, this is what Brian does. He knows this is his whole thing. It's like, I told John this. I said.
Comedy? That's my whole thing?
No, yes. I told John this. I said, he goes, well, it'll be interesting to see. I go, well, just so you know, I'm his John Driver. So Brian will come in and pick on me the way that
so
I pick on you.
Brian, please have at it.
I am a huge fan of your guys' podcast.
Oh, that's very nice.
Thanks.
And Johnny comments on me pretty regularly, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
The difference is between his and mine, when he talks about me, I hear it by listening to your podcast. When I talk about Johnny on ours, he finds out about it when a friend who actually listens to my podcast tells him about it.
Oh, yeah. People will be like, oh, we heard about you from, because I've had people come to the shows now. Recently, some ticketed shows I've had, and they go, we found out about you on Nate Land podcast, and we started watching your videos, and now we're fans. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. And then I go, can you give me the exact timestamp of those moments where I was
What's
mentioned?
What's Nate Land podcast? Brian's on there?
No,
I am a fan of your podcast, and I do listen. And I was thinking in the car, my favorite show is Seinfeld. Yeah. There's no learning on that. That was what it's famous for.
Right. No learning, no hugging.
But I also, it's just funny, but also my other favorite show is The Office for the exact opposite reason. It's very funny, but there's also some tender moments, some real moments. And I think you guys have a great balance of that.
Oh, that's very nice.
It's very funny, but you also, you know, you talk about religion, which I like. You throw in a little politics, yeah. nothing too crazy.
A little pathos. Yeah, a little like, I think that's kind of like what Judd Apatow kind of figured out with his comedies. He figured out a way to kind of be super silly and over the top and sometimes even gross, but he would add like this weird pathos mm-hmm. at the end and that nobody else was really doing mm-hmm. in like comedies. And that's kind of where he made his, and I don't know, we try to, it's a balance. John and I really, we just wanted to roll tape on like some real conversations that we were having. This is a friend of ours idea,
yeah.
Dane. And he was just like, you guys should be recording these. And we're like, okay. I told somebody that the other day, they were like, you've been doing this podcast for over 5 years. And I go, yeah. I said, none of it would happen without John because I can just like roll in and sit down and record and we can just go.
Well, but the equitable division of labor has yeah. increased in the since we.
That's true. There's more on my end now.
We've been going up.
Since it's incremental.
Video and other things,
it's incremental. So now it's like I have things that I have to do, but it feels like it. If you just asked me that from the beginning, I'd be like, "We're never going to do this. We'll never keep."
Well,
it
no.
Up.
I mean, the consistency of it for this many episodes.
It's too much.
It's hard.
It's too much content.
But I will say this, and I thought about this the other day because we're now at a place where, because and it's going to sound a little cheesy, but I'm now nostalgic about the podcast.
Yeah. Do you guys find that with Nateland? What the Nateland podcast is something, it's got its own culture that spun off of it. And we can talk to Brian about this. Like, I was going to ask you this because I am on the Nateland podcast fan page now. Mm-hmm. I'm a member, proud member, joined the group.
Thank you.
And there's so much subculture in your podcast,
mm-hmm.
things that you've, the people have referenced. People make t-shirts, John, about things they've said on the podcast and wear them to the shows, like homemade, like a whole group of them.
See,
will wear
we need t-shirts
I'm
of
telling
things
you.
That we say.
I want to, yeah, but they're not, it's not really monetized. It's like, they don't, you guys have t-shirts too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys have the ones that you sell,
mm-hmm.
but they'll make their own ones that have like slogans and sayings that like,
well, if I can't monetize it, you know, I'm out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But yeah, it's. I think that's so interesting, the way something can take on a life of its own and become like self-referential. Sometimes
yeah.
you can fall into the weeds with that, where it's like you're kind of smelling yourself a little bit, where you're just like, the podcast is about the podcast,
yes.
is about the podcast.
Yes.
But yeah, you guys keep creating new things, and it feels like it catches on, and it's built this – people take ownership of it in a cool way.
Yeah, very much so. I never thought I would be the point where I don't read stuff about myself. Because I'm always so interested, but now it's kind of got to that point. And there's some subreddits and stuff like that, and sometimes they're not very nice. And
yeah,
you know, and I try not to. But then my wife will say, because she'll get mad about it, and she was like, "Can you believe they said blah blah?" I'm like, "I didn't know that."
Yeah, don't tell me that
until you told me.
Know,
stop
right?
telling me.
She's supposed to be your press secretary. Just give you the
yeah.
stuff
yeah.
you need to know that
yeah, exactly.
keeps you confident.
Yeah exactly.
What did Reagan used to have that bit about? If you're the president, it's just like somebody poking you at like 4 a.m. Problems. Problems. You know? That's what she's doing to you.
Yeah.
Hey, I found some negative comments. Let's
yeah.
go ahead. Y'all, I needed to be taken down a notch.
Yeah.
I've got fresh stitches I just had taken out. Thanks, lady. But yeah, it's I think that's really cool, and it's so funny because you guys started the podcast. It was almost like a lot of people did this during the pandemic. It's just something to do, right? Wasn't that mm-hmm. the general idea?
Yep.
He probably wouldn't have done it otherwise, right? He was
right.
touring busy and
right.
just thought, let's try it, and you
right.
guys kind of fumbled your way through the first few episodes
yeah.
figuring it out.
Yep.
And it's so cool, and I just love it. And I love that he added you guys. I don't think he even knew Aaron very well, did he?
Mm-mm.
It was just like, who else could we get
mm-hmm.
that has our same sensibility? And Aaron was a comic in the scene who was rising.
Yeah, it's just like any TV show. When you look at the characters at the beginning,
yeah.
their characters evolve. And I'm sure you guys, mm-hmm. well, you just said that. You've evolved as well. Everybody
sure.
does. But
yeah.
when it first started, he was like, I'm thinking about having you as a just producer, the guy in the, like, not in the booth, but, you know, like in a radio show that chimes yeah. in occasionally with an answer.
Yeah.
And then maybe having a woman on. And he was saying, just to kind of play off of, laugh at my jokes. And he
yeah.
really just wanted to be all, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to say
no,
that.
No, that's
whatever.
What a lot of comics would be like.
Exactly.
How can we, like Dan and the Danettes on the Dan Patrick Show.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And then, of course, it never quite goes like you expect. And you know, I didn't talk as much at first, but then we just becomes a life of its own. And now it's just buddies chatting, just like you guys do.
Yeah. And then you guys added Dusty, which was very smart. Dusty Slay. Who was a guest on the show a few times, and I think Nate just was like, this works, let's
yeah.
keep this going,
because really
tons of great comments from him.
Yeah.
He's got a totally unique perspective.
Yeah.
All you guys do, that's what's cool, is it's kind of like the four-headed Voltron of like everybody brings something, some different energy to the show.
Do you know how many podcasts there are in the world?
No, I don't.
I looked this up. Actually, I heard John Chris say it, and I thought that can't be right, and I looked it up.
How many?
You want to guess?
I'm going to guess.
A million?
I was going to guess like 10 million.
5 million.
Five.
Right, a million.
5 million.
Isn't that crazy? I did read an article of the day, and I hesitate to share this on a podcast.
Yeah.
Talking about someone else's podcast.
Yeah.
But it has to do with the pandemic and how so many of these started around then, and how, like, as people come kind of back into their real lives a little bit, that there is a decline. I don't, it's not like,
listenership
across the board for everyone.
Once they get back to their real lives,
it's like, I don't have time to listen to 5 of these a day anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm back in the office so there is that spike. Cause we have a good friend, Allison, started her podcast on the Kennedy dynasty, during the pandemic as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's sort of a common origin story for a lot of different podcasts. It's just interesting how that's going to play out in terms of what people's lives afford them in term. There is a luxury to it to go, I have this much time. I mean, I know, because it has to take away from your TV time and it has to take away from your online time, you know.
Well, so. Yeah. And then sometimes if you become like Neyland has taken over people's, I think it's really captured people's imaginations as far as like they love spending that hour or 2 hours with you guys. And so it's like appointment television for them.
Yeah.
They make time in their day for it.
Those are the ones I think that will survive in terms of like, if it's.
And we have people that write us sometimes, they'll be like, where's the episode today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we're late, they'll be like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah. Bates will be that way. And especially about this one, he'll be like, why did you cut me down?
Why did you want John's mom on the episode that I was supposed to be on? Why did you ask her last minute? One last shot.
We need somebody on this to ground this show. We need somebody.
We were at lunch right before this. And
we'll just bump the other guy. Mom, come on.
The waitress, you're asking the waitress, hey, you ever done a podcast?
Hey, you seem really interesting.
Yeah.
Just come on and talk about drinks.
Yeah. But the majority of podcasts, as we all know, they don't last very long.
Right.
They record 2 or 3 and then they're done. You guys, how many episodes have you done?
This will be close to 260.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's basically an hour, so we've talked for 260 hours.
Yeah.
Too much.
I have a general rule, not to, obviously if it's a popular podcast, I'll jump on it immediately, but I'm always the guy who gets asked, hey, I'm starting a podcast, would you like to be my first guest? And no, I really don't. My general rule is, if I don't know them, they have to have been doing it for a year.
Yeah.
Because then that shows there's some dedication,
they're
really trying.
Yeah.
But not like when they've done 3 in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I've been asked, and usually I'll say yes just because it's whatever, and I don't know. But yeah, it is odd when you go, you know, you give up your time to be on something. If it's different, if it's over Zoom or something, and you know it's just whatever. But yeah, it is a lot. And you want to know, people are like, are you taking care to build an audience for this? Do you know what you're doing? I think it's made me a bet. What do I think I do when you talk about being a guest? I think having my own podcast has made me a better guest on other podcasts. Do you believe that about yourself? Have you noticed that, the way that you interview and the way you keep a conversation kind of moving?
I think so. And Dusty was just on Bob and Tom, and he said, he's been on there a few times. He said, I just had my best experience on Bob and Tom. And he said, I think it's because being on this podcast, when you're with multiple people playing off each other, you get, your timing's better.
Yeah. You know when to lay out a little bit better. I think I was probably, I'm still guilty of steamrolling. Part of John and I's energy is we steamroll each other a little bit, but I think I do it.
Yeah, let me stop you right there, John.
I think I do it for fun. I think I do it because I know when I'm doing it, whereas before I think I was just like subconsciously. But if I'm on a podcast interview and the interviewer, I feel like it's lagging, I think I know now I can pull this out to keep this moving, or I know when to sit back a little bit. Like I'm probably going to launch my own solo podcast where it's an interview based on the road, like road interviews with comics, because I'm doing a lot more road dates. And we'll just tack those onto this, or it'll be a different platform maybe. But if we do that, I think I'll be a better interviewer because of, you know, 260 hours of conversation with John and other people. Like you know when to lay back a little bit.
Well, you're quicker than I am just in general, but you'll notice, I think that you're often thinking ahead while someone's talking, because I know you're developing a bit over there.
Yeah.
I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and so I know you may not be catching everything I'm saying at the moment because you're about to drop gold, you know. But that's why you'll notice I'm usually, when I start talking, if I want to get a thought out, it's more drawn out, a lot more ums. I can't think of the word. Like, I'm just okay with that, but my brain just doesn't move quite as fast as yours. I mean, it's healthier. The brain's healthier than yours, but
yes,
it doesn't move.
No, there's no doubt your brain's healthier.
So, I got a good brain.
Yeah, like, brain. But you know, we do. We would be guests on Rick's.
That was a political reference.
Our
by
friend.
The way. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I made a political reference about my good brain.
So. Oh, that's.
I would never say that. I'm not going to say who it was.
Oh, okay. We'll talk
about it.
You're a stable genius. But I think we've been on Rick's podcast. Our buddy Rick Roberts. He had one for years, and he would have us on as guests, and we would sometimes work out bits and stuff. And it is interesting the different energies that different hosts have, and what they kind of, you can see what their directives are and what mm-hmm. their goals are. Versus some people just get on and be like, let's just see what happens. And you can feel that energy too. I think it's important that we have no real direction. We have segments that we've added, which I like. I like some structure. Like now we do This Week in History and we do a couple of different things. And
Johnny has always, and you were just telling me that your agent was talking to you about this a little bit.
Yeah.
And I do the same thing a little bit. Johnny is always dissecting what is most alive around him, which can tend to, like, the podcast can be going great, and he'll be like, yeah, but I know they want more of this. And I'm like, well, where's your data? Do you really know they want that? In fact, when we went to networks and stuff, when we were really pitching, we were like, we can scrap the whole thing and do, what do you want to do? And they were like, we really like what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that you have a almost like this sense of obligation to think that this requires self-improvement, which I do too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you'll sometimes, but I like a system put in place that we can run for a long time that I can feel like safe in. Like, okay, mm-hmm. this is okay. We're doing our thing. I don't know about the outcomes. You can't control that. But I like this. I think Johnny, I think maybe that's your seven wing.
Oh boy,
I still think you might be sevens. A seven.
Are you an Enneagram guy?
I've never done it.
Do you know about it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Here you guys talk about it.
You don't know what type you are? You never taken a test or anything?
I've never done it.
Could you, from what you know about Brian, would you go ahead and judge him, boil him down for us real quick?
Because that's, Johnny,
but what you know, a lot of what you know about Brian, though, is from his act. So that's a persona.
None of that's real.
I don't like the trope of I'm going to boil someone down. Let's talk about that.
That's a real five thing to say.
Yeah. I figured in those pitches, Johnny was the George Costanza. This is the show.
Yeah, this is the show, and we're not compromising it.
Yeah.
No, those pitches...
we're not dumbing it down for you.
I really kind of was, because the network, actually the one we ended up going with, Life Audio, we did. It was kind of like, they, I don't want to say they pursued us, but they were the one pitch meeting we had where there were already fans of the show in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we love what you do, don't change a thing. And I was like, well, I just want to make sure that we get the ground rules down on what we expect from you. And like, so John was like, okay, Johnny's going in hot a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so part of that's just like, you do 200 episodes of something, it is kind of your baby. And you're like, even though you're hoping to get a bigger audience for it, and you hope these people can help you get that, you're like, also, I don't want it to look totally different because we did this.
Right.
I still want it to feel like me. So authenticity is important to me, but maybe it's not to you. But
no, I think the hard thing for me with the podcast was I came from TV news background, where I was producer and everything's very stacked and organized, and you know where you're starting, stopping, all that. And then we started this podcast, and Nate's very much like, let's don't talk about anything beforehand.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this just go with
extemporaneous,
it. And,
I'm
like, I get that, and while that's more authentic, but let's have a little structure. It was hard for me at first.
Right.
To be just so out there. And sometimes if the show didn't go exactly well, I'm like, yeah, if we'd have just talked a little bit beforehand about, let's talk about this, it would have helped.
Yeah.
See, I have this weird thing with us on that, and that goes back to my nostalgia of the podcast is really not about the product of it. Although I'm proud of it, I'm proud of our audio, and I think that we've said some courageous things and probably some foolish things. But I think that we were...
I can agree with that as a, as a listener.
I mean, if you're going to have any sort of, like... significant conversations in life, that's going to be
some of it's going to age poorly.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's the time with my friend that I really, so we always eat lunch beforehand, and that's usually where we're having talks that we would never have on the air.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's
about stitches.
Yeah.
That
he
had
tells
out.
Me about the, yeah, yeah. He tells me
wounds, both private and public
moral failures, you know, the whole thing.
And but, I was like, I've been recording this whole time. Was I not supposed to be? I'm not a Bud Light person, but that's just beer.
Bud Light came up at our conversation
today.
It's
everywhere. It's
all
over.
Was your mom?
Mom was kicking him back. I was like, geez.
Yeah, slow down.
No. It's her Mother's Day tradition.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just kidding, Mom. She's blushing right now. No, I actually was talking about have you ever been to the Anheuser-Busch, the factory in St. Louis? Like, did the tour?
Yeah,
because it's fat. Have you ever done the tour,
no.
Guys?
Go to the. You went
y'all,
to the brewery.
Y'all both travel.
The brewery tour. That was like you said this was like my Willy Wonka. That's what I remember you saying that. You said I was
your heaven.
You swam in the river of beer.
I just was fascinated.
There was a waterfall.
It was a lot of history, and it was a large operation. It was pretty amazing. So
I mean, I've never done the Jack Daniel's distillery.
I haven't either. I haven't done that one.
Yeah,
but I mean, there's a lot of history there.
John's like, I've got a golden ticket. Yeah,
we love St. Louis. Have you ever done the City Museum in St. Louis?
No, you've told me about it though. Like it's like junk, right? Like junk that they've built into like these structures you can climb on and stuff.
See, how old's your daughter?
One.
Okay, so when she's about. I would say as young as probably 4 or 5, mm-hmm. go to the City Museum in St. Louis.
Okay.
It's called a museum, but that's really not what it is. They have taken, engineers have taken like leftover building supplies from anything in the city that's ever been torn down. Mm-hmm. And they have made out of a full like 5-story building. They have just fashioned mazes and slides, and it's out of metal and tile. And
this feels very dangerous. This feels like a monument to tetanus.
You would think so, but it's all like very well done, very safe, yeah. like you know, welded bars. They can climb, but yeah. they can't fall. There's an old airplane outside, uh-huh. suspended in the air, and then there's like this almost like monkey bar, but you can't fall through. You know, obviously, you can climb in this tube. You're out in just. You know, 5 stories in the air, climbing through a tube to get to the airplane to explore. I mean, I'm a grown man mostly.
You were in the tube. You were doing all this.
Yeah,
with them?
Okay. Laura and I both. I mean, you can go through with your kids. Yeah. I mean, and it was amazing. I mean, it was such an amazing experience. And like down in the basement, it's all dark and there's mazes down there and stuff to do, but it's all fun.
No, yeah, I don't think you were supposed to be down there.
So, I may have gotten kicked
said,
out.
Jeez.
I can't go back to St. Louis, but no, it was amazing. Not a sponsor, by the way, but they should be.
So you did that then? That was after the Bush? You had a good buzz going, is that what you're saying? You're like, this is museum.
This is amazing.
Like, sir, this is a building site. Get out of the scaffolding.
It's a slide.
Speaking of traveling, Johnny, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
You're a Southwest guy.
Right.
Exclusively. Are you, John?
Almost exclusively.
So you travel Southwest a lot?
Yes, a lot.
I don't. I just do whatever.
Right.
But I'm traveling tomorrow to San Diego, Southwest.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Checking in for my flight this morning, 9:55. Now, I'm on baby duty this morning, so I got my laptop up, and I'm sure you've got a system, which is what I want to ask about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm ready, 9:53, because a 4.5-hour flight to San Diego, you really want to make sure.
And you check in 24 hours out and get your boarding order.
Yes, right. 24
hours
out.
On the second.
Yeah, yeah.
My flight's 9:55, so at 9:53, I'm on, ready to do it.
Yeah.
At 9:53, my one-year-old drops her sippy cup, milk goes everywhere flying.
Yeah.
I grab a towel. I'm on baby duty. I'm quickly cleaning it up.
Yeah.
Get back up on the laptop. It's now 9:55. I check in. It's almost 9:56, I think, maybe by the time I hit it. I'm in group C9.
Oh, wow.
There's no way.
That's what I said. And I noticed as more and more people get pre-wall the stuff ahead of time, it's getting harder. But 1 minute in at the most, I'm seeing.
That means a bunch of people, though.
That's insane, though. I would buy the. You can't buy the upgraded.
So
boarding.
That's what I did for the first time. I've never done that. They said for $50, you can get through A1 through A15, and I'm like, I don't want to take a chance being in the middle seat.
No,
front. So I did it. $50 extra. I was A15. It's so funny that they're like, hey, you could be A1 through A15, and then I do it. Hey, you're A15.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, well,
what's your process?
My process is different because I am like elite, whatever.
Yeah,
because I fly Southwest so much.
That's what I figured.
I'm logged in automatically. Like, I automatically get an A. And if I was to not get an A, one time I didn't get an A. Like, if I book a flight the night before and then there's just no way to check in time because I'm A-list preferred, is what it's called, I can board between the A's and the B's. Even if I have a C, I can get on before the parents with children.
The
parents with children get it. I'm like, hold on, I've got status.
Yeah.
No, but So I don't really think about checking in, and it's good. The A-list is good because I have a guitar usually, and I can't.
Yeah.
It'll fit in the overhead, but if I'm boarding C, there'd be no room.
Yeah.
You're just like fighting to get that guitar on, or they're going to take it and hammer throw it on the tarmac.
Yeah.
But yeah, Southwest some people don't like that. They want to buy a seat and know that I'm boarding this. And so that cattle call thing that Southwest does, a lot of people don't like it.
Well, yeah, I will like say it. That we flew to Dallas last week, and it was American.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a huge fan of American just because of all the international travel we've done, and it hasn't always been the best.
Mm-hmm.
It just hasn't. But it was nice knowing that my seat was already ready.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I wasn't, because you do Southwest, you're thinking, man, we got to make sure we all, and when three of us travel,
yeah,
and my daughter and my wife, like it's a, we got to get an A and B, because, or we got to go to the very back of the plane,
uh-huh,
and find what we can. So I do like that idea of it. I mean, it has an upside, I suppose, but, and I never fly first class.
No.
You know, but if I did, I you kind of wish Southwest had that.
Southwest first class is the exit row.
Yeah.
So if you're A high enough, like with A15, you'll be able to get an extra row if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's towards the middle of the plane, or you could sit in the front. But if you sit in the front, you don't have a lot of overhead space. So I go to the middle of the plane, over the wing, exit, and that's first class. Me and Aaron Weber have had this conversation about who's on Nate Land podcast as well. We talk about, he said, I think he has a bit where he says that the smoker's lounge is the Southwest flight club or whatever, you know, the Admiral's Club,
mm-hmm,
the Delta Lounge,
mm-hmm,
but in the airports where they have smokers lounges, that's the Southwest.
Now Aaron's strategy, which I think is a pretty good one, he gets the seat right in front of the exit row.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that's the best chance, if the plane's not full, that middle seat will be empty, because everybody goes at least that far back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're not going to turn around and go back to the front.
Yeah.
So that's his strategy. It's pretty good strategy.
Well, and he has another strategy too, as a big guy, of sitting in the seat opposite another big guy. He finds the biggest guy, and he sits there knowing that the middle, he goes, and we together make the fattest human to make that the least attractive middle seat. He goes, he has a bit about it. He says, I've had people walk on and be like, I'll just take the next flight. I've done that before where you want that middle seat not to be taken, and you kind of lean. I develop scoliosis suddenly, and I'm leaning into that middle just to make sure.
My strategy is just to sit in the middle at the beginning and then say, guys, either one of these is open. Anybody wants to join me?
Yeah. You pat it. You pat it as they walk by. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that you're eager to have them.
Yeah.
You have one of my favorite jokes that you do, Brian, and I don't know if you do it a lot. Like sometimes comedians have bits that other comedians love,
mm-hmm,
and like there are people like, you don't do that anymore, and I go, yeah, it doesn't work every time, and I just stop doing it. And so I don't know if this is one of those bits for you, but I love it so much. It's about the support animals, emotional support animals on planes. So talk about that, Johnny. I don't know if he's heard this.
Yeah, that's actually maybe the only joke that came from our podcast when we were just,
yeah,
I don't know if you come up with material from this
sometimes
or not, but I actually said that during the podcast, and then I tried it as a joke. So, you know, people were getting crazy with the emotional support animals. It was a turkey, it was a peacock, pig, whatever. And then a year or so ago, FAA or whatever just said, no, you can't do that anymore. So now it's just dogs, your emotional support dog. I think that's totally backwards, because the people who have these emotional support dogs, there's nothing wrong with them. They just want their pet on the plane.
Yeah.
They use it as a crutch. There's nothing wrong with, they're fine. They just want their dog. But if you're bringing an emotional support squirrel, you got issues.
You need
it. And that's somebody that wants it. I want them to have their,
they need it.
Their emotional support snake when we're 30,000 feet in the air and they're banging their head against the window.
Nice.
I just feel like they got it backwards.
Yeah, because my favorite lines, you said, like, if this guy doesn't have his emotional support turkey, and then I get on the plane and sit next to him for some reason, now I'm his emotional support turkey.
Yeah.
He's got his arm around me. He's got me in a headlock.
Yeah. Maybe I'll bring that joke back this weekend.
It's funny. I just think it's such a funny idea.
Yeah.
Do you know my in-laws one time, for real, they were in a Cracker Barrel, and they looked over, and there was a lady. They kept hearing something. She had her purse open.
Yeah.
And she had an emotional support chicken inside her purse, eating off of her plate.
Oh my God.
That's like a Shawshank. She's feeding them the little maggot or whatever.
Yeah.
And of course, my mother-in-law's first thought was, what does the bottom of that purse look like right now? It was like, could you imagine just carrying around a purse full of chicken poop, basically?
Yeah. And, yeah. Into a restaurant.
Yeah. In a Cracker Barrel.
Not a sponsor.
No.
But, and probably won't be. We apologize. No.
And I want to defend myself before it's too late.
Oh, sure.
Johnny has brought up the golf cart incident numerous times.
Mm-hmm. It's a sore spot. Literally.
On your foot.
Literally. I have fresh stitches. I just had them taken out this morning. Everything's fine, though. Thanks for asking. I think I told you this, but in cold weather, sometimes, like if it's just really, really cold out, bitter cold, I will get still like pain in that toe.
Mm.
From when I broke it. So,
dude, you need Morgan and Morgan.
It's a Bart Durham situation.
Yeah.
So him handing me a check for some reason, whatever the amount is, I'm like, thanks so much. Great job on your makeup. Anyway, Bart Durham, not a sponsor. But Brian, you want to tell your side? I mean, I don't know what you think was incorrect about what I said.
Yes. So, you know the basics, right? We were playing golf together. There was
A janky course.
We were way off the fairway. Mm-hmm. There was a hill. I was driving the golf cart.
But whose fault was it you're way off the fairway?
That's just golf with us.
Yeah, I don't think we ever saw the fairway. It could have been a great course for all we know.
Yeah, that's true.
This place is janky. It's because we're in the rough the whole
exactly.
time.
We're in a neighborhood.
What's the deal? And there was a hill, and I believe Johnny said, go on down that, even though there's signs saying don't. Mm. Right?
Right. Well, we saw tracks. I said, well, people have driven here.
Okay.
Well, never told this part.
Yeah.
It was your idea to go down the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that was significant to share?
I don't think I said gun it, but... But he did.
I didn't gun it, but it was a pretty steep hill.
Man, it was steep.
There's tracks. And then I drive, I come to a safe stop, and then after we're stopped, Johnny jumps out and barrel rolls numerous times. No. Not once. Like, it was like a 720. It was multiple.
No, what happened was...
I'd like to see you
barrel roll. The momentum of this hill, he couldn't stop. Like, it was just coasting.
It sounds like you couldn't stop.
Just coasting. Yeah. We were gunning it. I mean, I was three bills then, easy. So we were going, and then he starts braking. Well, as he's braking, the car starts fishtailing sideways.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was a little muddy. And as we're, so it starts tipping my way because it's sideways on my side. And so I was like, I just remember the Johnny Knoxville. There was one of the Jackass movies where they jump a golf cart and like it pins him. Like it could have killed him.
Yeah.
And I was like, this thing's going to flip and I'm going to be in this cart and it's going to break my arm or kill me. So I was like, I just need to jump out. So as it's leaning, we're in mid, Fast and the Furious, and I jump out. Well, then, of course, my weight being removed, it cantilevers back. So Bates thinks like, oh, we were fine. But with my weight, we would not have been fine. It would have tipped all the way
so
over.
So you're saying you saved Bates' life, and he's saying...
We needed a hero that day. And a better driver. We needed both things.
Someone.
But as I jumped out, I planted on... this foot, my right foot, and I heard a snap, and a barrel rolled, and then and it was just one of those things.
For the record, he just lifted his left foot, as he said, this foot, my right foot.
Well, I was lifting both, but yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I don't know my left and my right.
As an attorney.
So, yeah. Your Honor, if it pleased the court.
But my argument is, one of these days, Johnny's going to go on one of these reality shows, and he's going to need a good backstory of his trauma, and I'm going to be the guy who helped him go all the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can hear some good music behind that.
There's a lot of...
Like, low strings. Like,
everybody needs an origin story. That's when I became the toe.
Yeah.
Or whatever my...
Because Johnny was a scratch golfer at the time, and now he can't play anymore. He's just like Kramer with the Sue Ellen Mischke when he...
It is.
...injured his...
Yeah, arm. I'm not mad about it. I just want justice.
Mm.
That's fair to say. I just want whatever amount you think is right.
Right. Retribution.
Yeah.
Right.
You mean monetarily?
Well, I mean.
Almost like reparations. Like he wants.
I should pay for at least your medical bills.
You want.
Yeah. I did get a boot. I think I said, because you, if I remember, here's another thing about Brian. He goes, are you going to keep playing? This is the ninth hole. We had paid for 18 holes.
I have one question, though. Did you ask him when he hurt his toe, did you say, hey, is your toe okay?
No, we were on the front nine. I think we played a
No, this was the... Did we play more?
I think we played a couple
of
holes.
We did play more. We did keep... Because I was like trying to be... You know, the embarrassment, yeah, adrenaline too.
The adrenaline.
And I have mud on my clothes. And I'm just like, ugh. And you go, you don't... And I go, yeah. And I said, I think I'm going to quit at 9. Because, you know, you're right at the back of the parking lot.
Right.
And then you go, I'm going to play on.
Yeah. Well, it was a beautiful day. Why should I suffer? Because Johnny jumped out of a perfectly set cart.
Oh, man. Now, I was trying to tie that to his lack of concern over your stitches.
Yeah. Now it's
now
come back.
You've equalized the situation.
Is it my fault he was 3 bills? No. Lay off
no.
the...
And you didn't help. I feel like when I was heavier, a lot of people made me their Chris Farley and their John Belushi. Like, I was there like, dude, Johnny's coming. Let's all get wings. Like, everybody just... I felt like there was more gluttony.
Yeah.
I was like their proxy glutton.
I thing. Certainly...
Their reason to go off the wagon.
Well, we visited...
Like, we're not getting salads. Come on, Johnny. Let's get some cheese sticks in here. I'm like, all right, guys.
We visited a lot of Chinese buffets in our younger days.
We did.
A lot.
Yeah.
Like, almost daily.
Yeah. One of them was called Daily. The Daily Buffet.
It really was.
It really was.
Is now this it's, in Knoxville?
We took it very seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, Knoxville. Is that Clinton Highway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Daily Buffet.
That's...
I don't think they were open every day, honestly. I think they were closed on Sundays.
We went anyway.
Yeah. We made them open just for us. Yeah.
They were called the weekly till you guys keep around.
They're like, we're losing,
up our game.
We're leaving money on the table with these guys.
Just like your podcast. It wasn't always weekly, but...
No.
Had to step it up. Step it up.
Oh.
So anyway, Johnny, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. One thing I did want to ask you about, too, and that I think was such a cool experience that you got to have is... You were part of the record-setting show at Bridgestone Arena a month ago.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. It was the biggest crowd you'd ever been in front of, probably, right?
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
By far.
So how did that go? And you were the first one out. So technically, I think you tweeted about this, technically you set the record.
I set the record. The mainstream media wants, doesn't mention that.
Yeah, everybody has their narrative. But.
Yeah, they have their narrative. They just want to give it to Nate, but whatever. You know, there's very few things in comedy you want to say, I'll never do bigger than that. But unless Nate is nice enough to put me on even a bigger show of his, I feel pretty confident I'll never perform in front of that many people.
Yeah, Nate added me to his shows in Knoxville because he's so nice. And I was like, hey, this is my hometown, and you're coming to Knoxville in December. And I used to go to shows at the Civic Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, and so I'll tell my friends, like, hey, go to those shows. But it's not like I'm like, yeah, I'm performing in front of 6,000 people tonight. It's whatever. Like, I get whose name is on the ticket, but it's still such a cool experience that you got to do it, man.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't even perform in a show that small, but anyway.
No, you're right. You want to slum it.
Was it a secret show?
It is a secret show. It's just a pop-up show.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. And as you know, my voice, I'm still not 100%, but my voice was really struggling. I've been dealing with something going on. And that afternoon, I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. I was really, really struggling with my voice. I can't get out there and embarrass myself. I mean, I'm probably going to embarrass myself anyway, but I need a full voice. And I just did a lot of hot tea. And is that what you're doing over there?
That's coffee.
Oh.
It's
hot tea. And I only did 7 minutes. So I thought, I think I can do this. And I went first. They kept delaying the start of the show because downtown Nashville was a zoo. There was a Luke Combs concert that night at Nissan Stadium. There was Lady A. Oh, you just went to, Taylor, well, you didn't go, but.
I was in the vicinity.
He was involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there by proximity.
You were at Pinewood Social.
Pinewood Social, and then I circled the stadium on foot with some friends
so
in the
crazy.
Rain at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So dumb.
So I listened to the concert still. But yes, it was Madhouse down there.
And it was just so crazy. They kept delaying the start. Now, I was glad about that because, obviously, I don't want a million people milling around while I'm on stage. So every time they delayed it, I was happy. And my friends were texting me, hey, we're out here in line. It's not moving. We can't get in. So finally, like 7:40, they started. So we're supposed to start at 7. And the other thing is we're in the round, which I've never done.
Yeah.
So that's another big obstacle, this tiny stage in this giant room. And, you know, I'm up there practicing before the show.
Yeah, moving around.
Walking in circles. That was really weird, especially, like, when you deliver your punchline, you want to stop to do it. So there was a lot of factors involved that I'd never done. But it was really fun. It went really fast because, like I said, I only did 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And Aaron and Dusty and Nate's dad were all on the show as well. And it was crazy. I mean, you definitely, your jokes, you have to time it where – the laughter, you know, kind of.
Yeah, like, I was going to ask you about that. Like, it is different. Yeah. You have to. That's another reason it goes by so fast is because you've not accounted for that time.
Yeah.
And if you get a laugh, like, it descends slower. It dies down slower.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to give it a minute. And I have a tendency, my rhythm is similar to Nate's rhythm in that we step on our punchlines sometimes. We have little afterthoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of my rhythm. But I think as he's become a theater and now an arena performer, he's had to adjust to that too, probably.
I'm sure he has.
It is an adjustment. Because sometimes it's like, I did this one room and it was like a Catholic event for like 6,000 Catholic university students. And they put me in like a ballroom. And it was like one of those where they had the fake walls. And they just broke down that wall, that wall. And so they just kept going like 10 ballrooms deep. But yeah. It was like a cannon.
Yeah.
And so they had all these support screens. And so I thought, this is going to take, for me to get my words to the back of that room, it's taking forever. And then to hear their response back, it was so strange. It wasn't a wide room.
What's bad is when it doesn't come back.
It didn't come back at all.
You just didn't laugh. Okay.
They must have just missed it, tapping the mic a lot. But
it was great. I was debating really up to that day what jokes to do. 7 minutes is so fast, and I'm sure you may feel like this as a pastor, or you may feel like this as I would be more nervous. I was more nervous about doing 7 minutes than I was, say, 20 minutes.
Right, right.
20 minutes, I feel like I can get in a groove and get to know me.
If there's a flat spot, you can get out of it.
That's right. Seven minutes is so fast. If you pick the wrong jokes, you don't get a chance to recover.
Yeah.
You don't get a chance to get in a rhythm. So I was like, do I want to do my Nashville material or do I want to do my more tried and true material? I chose my Nashville material. I think it was the right decision, especially after being a 40-minute delay, because I do jokes about Nashville traffic and the Predators, and it went pretty well, I think. So
that's interesting. You're right. When you're doing a shorter set, it's all about the choices. We just did that thing for Nate Land Productions at Zany's, and we have 8 minutes, and it's like you're looking at your whatever 2 hours of material, and you're like, these choices matter, because you're saying yes to something, you're saying no to everything else.
Yeah.
So it's, you can choose wrong. I mean, you hope all your jokes are good enough to be in, but you're like, yeah, but I'm not used to doing this one in this order with this. So is this the right thing? It's interesting, your choices. But it was a historic night, and it's amazing that he set the record. And, you know, speaking of history, John, I want to end the show because Brian's with us, and I thought it'd be fun to have him comment on some of these too. We do a show, we do a segment every week on the show about this week in history. It's a segment we like to call, Brian,
Talk About Then.
That's right. This week, 1928, the first regularly scheduled U.S. TV broadcasts, General Electric Station WGY of Schenectady, New York. Programs were only broadcast Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons from 1:30 to 3:30. So that was the first TV programs. You had 2 hours only on those 3 days. Isn't that strange? Now we have.
Yeah.
You can't get away from it.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember. I'm sure you. How old are you, John?
44.
Okay, you're a little bit younger, but I'm old enough to remember when TV would go off the air at night.
They'd play the national anthem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'd go, boop.
Yep.
Then they started adding the Flo-B haircutting vacuum system kind of commercials would come on.
Yeah.
That would be your late night.
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's throw this on. Let's make a little bit of money. Tom Bosley will sell hair weaves or something or whatever.
Johnny's such a TV connoisseur. I mean, I feel like I am back in that day, but Johnny has me beat it. But we share some similar stories.
Yeah, and we talk about our favorite episodes of Give Me a Break or whatever sometimes around the lunch table.
Three's Company, Mr. Furley.
Oh, gosh. Our friend Rick, who does Barney Fife impressions, I always say that he should be like, and now I'm going to do my Mr. Furley impression, just put on an ascot and do the same voice. It's the same guy.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We just talked about Saved by the Bell in our podcast. Yeah. I was too old for Saved by the Bell.
Really?
Yeah.
It was in the 90s. I was in college and started working, but Nate and Dusty, that's right in their heyday. And maybe you too.
Mine too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't know there was a show called Good Morning, Miss Bliss. Did you know that?
I knew of it. Was it like a prequel or something?
Yeah, that's how it started. And I just learned this. Haley Mills was supposed to be the star.
Yeah.
The kids kind of became the star. So they just rebooted it as Saved by the Bell, moved it from Indianapolis to Bayside, California.
And got rid of Haley Mills.
Got rid of Haley Mills.
Which she was a Disney property, huge Disney property from the Parent Trap movies and other things she had done. So they thought, well, this will be her vehicle. And then they were like, we like the kids.
Yeah.
The kids are the stars. That's how it happens, man. Those shows, I call it getting Urkeled. It happened way before Urkel, but that's the most famous 90s reference of it, of like, you build a show about this working class black family, and then the neighbor kid it's so cute
mm-hmm.
that right. it overtakes the show. It happened on Good Times, most mm-hmm. famously with J.J. Walker mm-hmm. with his dynamite. Everything became about getting dynamite.
And a little bit of different strokes, too.
Yeah, different strokes, too. And so it is interesting, like when a show...
And the Fonz.
Like, yes. You're right. He was just a side character.
Yeah.
Then it became the Fonzie yeah. show. Yeah, I don't know. But, okay, so let's keep moving. Christmas was banned in Massachusetts this week, 1659, John.
What?
The real war on Christmas. The celebration of Christmas holiday was made illegal in Massachusetts. The Puritans associated such celebrations with paganism and idolatry. Violators were fined. I don't know what the fine would have been. I wish I knew. This remained in effect until 1681. So, it's like 32 years. So they had a 32-year ban on the Christmas holiday in Massachusetts in the 1600s.
I just imagine that's because they see Christmas again as some sort of, like I said,
it was a commercialization or a threat.
Advent, right.
Right.
Because, well, and again, Advent originally was not about Christmas.
Well, this would have been pre-commercialization of Christmas, maybe, but yeah, I think they just saw it as like they're ruining it. Like,
I mean, Dusty Slay, I don't think he minds me saying this. He's like that now.
Yeah. He thinks we've messed it up.
Well, it's not even the commercialization so much. He's like, Christmas wasn't in the Bible, so.
Yeah, again, Advent traditions were always about the second coming of Jesus, and I forget what year that it also then the church tied that to the church calendar for a celebration of the first, but interesting to me that it would be outlawed. It's something that today is considered by most churches to be sacred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always...
Yeah.
I always think about when Paul wrote about, like, hey, you know, one person esteems this day to be higher than another, and another person esteems all days to be the same, and let each one be convinced in his own heart what he's going to do. Let him, if you're going to worship like this unto the Lord, try not to offend your brothers and sisters. If you're going to worship like this to the Lord, and try not. But I mean, that's just fascinating, though. I think anytime you start, not to use cliche, but you start legislating then those things,
right?
Then it's like you always say,
you have to believe like I do, or else
once you get merch, like you said, or once you start making laws. Then I think you know you're not ever going to create a kingdom cohesion between something that's supposed to be divine and something that's earthly.
Well, our beliefs,
unless Jesus is the only king,
we have a very diverse population. So we have that's part of what makes America great. Honestly, is like the people, you know, it's e pluribus unum, and so like even the stuff like that's going on now with the let's put the Ten Commandments in every school or whatever they're trying to get. This is performative legislation anyway. This doesn't do anything to help anybody. It's just like, hey, let's look like we're on the side of the Ten Commandments and we're putting God back in schools. It's performative. But it's like, I can see why that would offend some people that don't believe how we do. It's like, that's not got anything to do with school. Just like, let it go. Like, I don't understand that. Even as a believer, I'm just like, that's so strange to me that we would, that's our hill to die on now. I don't like it.
So, well, I think the country was, as I read history, at least, I know there's going to be people who disagree with that. That there was a sense of separation. They were much more likely to invoke God's name in the documents or you know in mottos and things like that. So I'm not saying that they just completely had that separation, but there was a sense of we have to protect the church from the government.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have to protect,
and we don't want a state religion,
right? We don't want this because we know. And however you think of it, as chicken and egg, or which one's affecting the other. They felt that separation was... They knew togetherness was not good, to have the two things together. So if you're going to be in the political side or the civic side, then you should lead according to the principles of your faith. That's where you show up as a person of faith, not as a person trying to, you know, propagate a faith.
Yeah.
But that's when your faith should affect you because you're a person of integrity or you're a person trying to, affect outcomes in a positive way. So... And that's why I want your vote in 2024.
Yeah, John, this has felt like a big stump speech.
Guys, I think this is why we brought you on, Brian. This is my day to announce, and we wanted you here for it.
So. All right, last couple. Born this week. Oh, you were going to... Oh, sorry.
What were you
going
to say?
Were you going to submit some...
I was going to just kind of play off of that and talk about how it's... Because I hear you guys talk about this stuff all the time on the podcast. It's so hard to keep up. The thing now, Twitter... Used to be all the celebrities had the blue check mark.
Yeah.
That. Now, those are gone.
Uh-huh.
They hate Elon Musk. I'm broad brush here, but they hate Elon Musk because they think he's some radical conservative Trump lover. So now it's the opposite. If you have a blue check mark, they think you're
right. You're in the you're tank for this guy.
Trump.
Right.
There's like blue blockers now. I can't keep up.
Yeah. It is. It's weird. It's like the shifting sands of culture. It's like you just, you think you're, because my social media people, they were like, you need to go ahead and get the blue check mark, even though it's $8. And I go, I don't want to pay for Twitter. And they go, yeah, but this will help you get seen by more people. It'll help, whatever. And I swear to you, the week I did it was the week that everybody else's check marks got taken away for not paying. And the people who remained looked like they still were whatever. And now those, I'm like, now I look like a chump. I don't even, I didn't even want the thing. You're like, I don't, what am I doing here?
That's great.
I'm just like, it's like musical chairs. I'm like, I don't, I just want to, can I just write my jokes? And
let me see. I think it was Propaganda who said in a King's Kaleidoscope song that most people don't notice the system until it turns on you or turns on them. And I think that's the thing. An unsafe system will be unsafe for everybody eventually.
Mm-hmm. Well, and technology is the most unsafe system because it's literally, there was an article I read about planned obsolescence. Literally, General Electric or one of the light bulb companies knew that their light bulbs could last like years.
Yeah.
And they built their light bulbs to go out quicker.
Yeah.
Because they needed to be able to sell more light bulbs. And so it's a thing that has integrated in every technology. Yep. Your Apple computer has planned obsolescence built into it because they know they want to sell you the next latest greatest, your iPhone, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think Twitter is that. It seems like it's been around forever, but it's not. And it's going to irk enough people that they'll be on to the next thing. It's just a matter of, are we going to, who's left holding the bag? And, you know,
I mean, I'm old enough to say this. It sounds like an old man shaking his fist at the heavens, but it doesn't mean to be that way. But I'm old enough to think the fact that we have so much energy in conversation and that our markets are affected by social media changes on a vast scale that like literally it undoes some confidence in society.
Right.
If Elon Musk suddenly is in charge of Twitter and I go, look how integrated.
Yeah, it's a house built on sand.
This thread is so far into this, you know, tapestry of culture now. But yeah, it can't, like, it can't sustain. I mean, something's going to overtake. That's the other big thing is it's been a long time since something, even, I guess, since TikTok, really, since something really has now flooded and
like
said,
a disruptor.
Now this is the, because remember in the beginning, Twitter and all those things, they came so fast we don't want to be on Facebook anymore. That's where our parents are.
Right.
Well, we don't want to be, you know, and so now we don't want to be on Twitter anymore. Let's get Instagram. We don't want to be on Instagram anymore. We don't want to be on TikTok. Yeah. And I know they're continuing and people are making it, but it's almost like there is an establishment now of those things. Like, no, that's now embedded young to old. And these are expected. In fact, we can't just get rid of them because markets are depending upon these things. And the news cycle is depending upon these things. And like, it's just a high level of integration now that it's just shocking to me that we didn't have it.
Well, all I know, I just want people to know that I have a blue check mark and I promise you I'm a good guy. I don't, whatever, what do you need me to say?
Block him, everyone.
What do you need me to say that lets you know that I'm okay? I'm one of the good ones. Born this week, 1888, John, and lived to 1989. Irving Berlin, American songwriter.
Wow.
He wrote God Bless America, did not know that, and White Christmas, most famously.
Yeah.
Did not know he wrote God Bless America, though, in 1938. Recordings of White Christmas have sold how many copies? Do you guys want to ballpark it?
I think is it the more than any song?
I think so. It's 100 million.
Good grief.
100 million copies.
I think it's Bing Crosby sang it, right?
Yeah.
I think it's been number one more than any other song
ever. It's
crazy.
And it's lovely, but 100 million, man, that's incredible. And then, of course, it says, as a footnote, he wrote White Christmas even though he was Jewish. Mm. So, again, we're talking about Christmas.
And that's interesting.
So I think that they're kind of throwing that in as a little bit. I'm sure people are a little cynical about that. They're like, he was just cashing in on
the
commercialization of Christmas. But, right? No. Doesn't it change your whole opinion?
It does.
But Christmas does have that. Back to the previous conversation, Christmas, you don't have to be religious in order even to call it Christmas. I know that's been a whole thing.
But maybe
thing.
You did before he did this. He opened the gates.
Or maybe he wanted a blizzard to cancel everyone's Christmas.
That's what he wanted. He wanted the white Christmas so people couldn't get out and buy the trinkets for their kids and stuff.
Just everybody stay home.
And everybody stay home and open their Hanukkah presents.
Yeah, it's anti-Christmas.
It's like a Trojan horse song,
yes.
Basically. Like, oh, you think I'm liking Christmas.
I remember when I was a kid and Saturday Night Live had John Lovitz did this character, Hanukkah Harry. Do you remember Hanukkah Harry sketch? And he brought the presents, and so he comes down, and they're opening their Hanukkah presents. And I just remember, like, I didn't know anything about Hanukkah at all as a, you know, evangelical kid. And this kid opens it. It's like Mike Myers or somebody, and he goes, socks. And then he goes, 8 pair. Can you believe it? Like, that is just so funny. And so, like, all my the friends that I've known that are Jewish, they talk about, like, yeah, we got 7 times as many presents, but they were lame. They were like slacks.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So they were jealous of me getting like a TV for Christmas or whatever, or an Atari or whatever. Anyway, Irving Berlin. Okay. Last one. This one's about determination, John. I want you to think about your hard moments in life. You're like, oh, I got through. Brian, of course, walking wounded today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. He came in and did his job.
Such mm-hmm. courage.
But born May 1950, Shun Fujimoto was born. He was a Japanese gymnast, and he continued to compete in the 1976 Olympic gymnastics event. After severely injuring his right knee during his floor exercise, Fujimoto said that he did not want to let his team down by revealing his injury. His completing and scoring a 9.5 and 9.7 on the side horse and rings eventually enabled the team to win gold, defeating the team from the Soviet Union by a narrow margin. The dismount from the rings routine was from 8 feet above the ground, and it aggravated his already serious knee injury, dislocating his broken kneecap and tearing ligaments in his right leg. Doctors ordered him to withdraw from further competition or risk permanent disability. This guy.
And couldn't finish the back nine? On a toe?
I guess it does point to me not being an Olympian.
Yeah.
You've made a case that I'm not necessarily
lots of things on the show.
A world class Olympian.
I mean, he was Kerry Strug before
he was. He was the original Kerry Strug.
Man.
Which that was a big moment too. And you know, she did vault or whatever and she landed and she had one leg up like a flamingo at the end. It's like, how did she do it?
Could you imagine? 8 foot drop to stick a landing knowing mm-hmm. your leg's already
and
broken.
It and it further dislocated. And they said, you can't anymore. Like, you won the gold. Congrats. Do you want to pick up your kids later? Like, do you want to be able to walk?
Yeah.
Hopefully, I don't know if I think he's still alive, according to this. But so, yeah, he's, I never even knew this guy's story.
That is determination.
Yeah.
He stuck in there, Johnny.
He did, and he stuck the landing.
Yeah.
For real.
It reminds me of people.
Yeah.
Who may want to stick with our podcast by listening to past episodes.
We have a landing page. It's called talkaboutthatpodcast.com, where you can find all of our archived episodes. If you want to support the show, that's where you do that. You can get ad-free episodes there and learn a little bit more about us. Over 260 episodes, as we said. So you can just, that's a whole trip to Florida. That's it. That's your drive.
Yeah.
That's your summer.
How many podcasts have done 260 episodes out of 5 million? Not many.
Yeah, you would
maybe 500.
I hope you're right, because especially otherwise we look really silly.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's a lot. Most people quit after a few.
Most people would have taken the hint, but you guys,
just in your little bubble,
you just kept going. Stop. We have like the podcast version of a dislocated knee, and we're like, no, we have to do this. For the team, they're like, the team's gone. The team's on the bus. What are you?
It's been 4 years. It's another Olympics. Now.
Yeah, it's already. It's past. The moment's past. We're going to win the gold with your help, dear listener. And so go to that website. Leave a review and write a review. If you write a written review, it helps the algorithm find us, the almighty algorithm. It's our friend and it's our frenemy, if you will.
Yeah.
We don't understand it. We just try to harness it.
Right.
Like the wind.
I wonder if you could use AI to manipulate the algorithm.
It's happening, I'm sure.
Like, hey, AI. Talk to the
I don't think you say, hey, AI.
Hey, chat.
Remember, every futurist.
Can you contact the algorithm and tell it I want
to
be famous?
Every futuristic show, what's funny is every futuristic show we used to watch as kids would have somebody just speaking like, computer, find me. And then the. And it would find the. Yeah. And it really is. Like, we have that now. But we don't. I don't think of myself as those weird sci-fi people.
No.
We talked about my futuristic clothing that I hope to wear one day so that I can't embarrass myself with snaps that betray me into a I edited that clip the other day where my snap shirt came flying open and I was suddenly doing a burlesque show randomly in the lobby of a church. But we'll get our futuristic gray clothing, our drab gray clothing soon, and then we'll speak to our series. And I don't know,
Seinfeld has that great joke about the future. Every show, you know, he watches either the One Piece with the V.
Yeah.
Or what? I forgot what the other part is.
It's always a V shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like they're, it's like their bag. Like clothing is not to be attractive anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, it's functional only.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we know is wrong.
That's how I've been dressing for a long time. So.
Yeah.
I'm made for the future.
Well, when you're heavy, that's really it is. And I've heard Aaron talk about this too, about how he wore khakis for a long time and when he was at his heaviest. And just, it's like, I just thought of like clothes as like a bag to put over. Like, I don't want to draw any attention to this. Just what bag am I wearing today over this mass of flesh? You know, I just need to get a bag on and get out of here.
That's funny.
So
you can hear more about Johnny's thoughts on his past, his journey, weight loss, and other things. We talk about that a lot on the podcast at johnnyw.com. Lots of clips there. Lots of cool
stuff.
Yeah,
and John's books, amazon.com. Maybe you've heard of it. You have random packages showing up to your house from Amazon, probably.
Remind you, I'm not the John Driver who's the Mennonite theologian, because that guy's way smarter, and he has written books, so...
Maybe he knows something you don't know. Maybe
I think he knows a lot of stuff I don't know.
Talk about planned obsolescence. Like the Mennonites were on to that. They were like, we don't even need light bulbs at all.
Like, he has a book called The Atonement of the Church. I'm like, man, he really tackled a subject there. And if people go thinking that's me, they're going to be like, wow.
Yeah.
What is he doing on his podcast? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
you're really.
Yeah.
Yeah. You dumbed it down for the podcast. The average Joe.
Yeah. Let us think you dumbed it down for Johnny.
Yeah.
Brian, tell the listeners where they can find you and where they can learn more about what you're doing.
My website's brianbatescomedy.com. I think it's Brian Bates Comic on most of my socials. And
touring all over.
Yeah. I don't know when this comes out exactly, but.
This one will be out. Monday. So the following one, you'll be back from San Diego.
Okay. So next week, I'm at Cap City Comedy Club in Austin, Texas.
That's a great club.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
nice. Really good.
Next Sunday, May 21st, I'm at Cap City. So
yeah. Tickets still available for that. Probably. Hopefully. Well, maybe what? Not. Who knows? I don't what? Know. Probably.
Just
probably
a shot at me.
Probably.
Tickets will be definitely
a bunch of tickets you can still buy.
Tickets, yeah. Wow. Bogos, too. Yeah, it's like
bogos.
Wait around for bogos.
Yeah, wait around for the buy one, get ones.
Yeah, it'll happen. Coupon code.
There'll be a Groupon.
Yeah.
There'll be something.
Yeah, all that's true.
No, go see Brian on the road.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite comics and just such a great writer, and it's always fun hanging. Brian's somebody who helps me develop my ideas, too. We'll sit around and have lunch and kind of chew on ideas together, and there's only a few comics that you can do that with.
Well, Feelings Mutual.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, and it's great. It's been great getting to hang out for a little time with you.
I saw Johnny, I'll say this, because you already mentioned on the podcast that you did that Nate show that's coming up. Johnny killed it. I mean, everybody did great on that show. I don't want to besmirch anyone else, but Johnny was so great.
Oh, that's very nice.
As he does every time.
Yeah, that was about choices, too. I told you that night. I was like, I think I chose the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was in the middle of it going like, okay, this is going, I feel like I chose the right material. Because sometimes you get in the middle, you're like, man, I should have used this 30 seconds to do that bit instead. But that night I was like, I think I chose the right bits at least for that crowd. So that was good. And it was really generous of Nate to have us on too. That's really cool. He's kind of lending his platform these days.
Yeah.
Growing his empire is what he would call it probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really cool. He's a great, very generous comic in that way. So
yeah.
Good stuff, man. Well, you can find Brian on the Nateland podcast every week, and it's he doesn't need my help, but that fan base is like a mighty, mighty army of people, and it's like the Kiss army. They're very defensive of you guys.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody gets in the comments and starts talking trash, they're like, you leave Brian alone.
You leave Breakfast alone.
That's right.
Even when they're defending me, they call me some weird nickname.
Breakfast or Bradley or whatever. Yeah. Well, check it out, and it's been an honor having you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm a fan of their podcast, so I'm excited to be on.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, man. We'll have you back on again some other time. So, guys, thanks for everything you do every week, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week on
Talk About That.
Two weeks old in an iron lung, which is, you know, like a sealed oxygen unit, fighting for my life. I couldn't breathe properly, and apparently I didn't make a sound from the day I was born because my lungs were all messed up.
That's Martin Smith of Delirious sharing a personal testimony on The Walk, a podcast for worshipers. Join us weekly to hear songwriters, worship leaders, filmmakers, and other creatives tell stories in the form of a devotional. The Walk can be found on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast platform.